So we were thinking about writing a kind of social contract between activist providers and their users. And we are trying to address a number of problems with this policy. Some of these problems are between the administrators of the services and the users. And some other problems are how the different activist servers can coordinate. So one problem is that when activists are looking for another service, an alternative to the corporate providers, then they are looking for an activist operator. And somebody says, oh, I am an activist operator. So they start to use that service. But actually, it's quite unclear what is the difference between a commercial provider and an activist provider. The other problem is that a lot of activists are not looking for activist providers, but they are really happy with the corporate services, exactly because of the same reason, that it's not clear what is the difference between the two, other than one is run by capitalists and the other one is run by activists. But what does this mean from a technical perspective? And the last one is that when people want to start setting up, when they arrive to this point that they should be operating their services on their own, so they start to set up an activist server, it's quite difficult for them to try to understand the aspect of mail, the aspect of logs, the aspect of storage. So on a very superficial level, what we are trying to do is also a kind of checklist. If you are building a server, this is the kind of things that you can watch out for.
This whole policy originated back in 2006, I think, when a bunch of activist collectives met up at a conference in Dijon. That was about the same time when Pusky died off as a physical place and we started doing hosting. And it was really inspiring for me to be together with all these different collectives and share experience and actually have some very concrete guidelines of, okay, how am I going to do this properly so that I can offer servers towards activists without them risking jail, basically.
Okay. So how did we... what is the idea that we propose to address some of these problems? It is to have some kind of standard, or even you can think about it as a kind of certification that lists what kind of criteria an activist server can deliver. And this should be one document that doesn't change very often and which is technology agnostic, and which lists for each service what are the requirements. And then there is another document that we are also working on, which details the best practices of how to implement, how to conform to these requirements on a particular system. And then if you have this standard, then an activist provider can declare on their website, okay, being webmail with this level of conformance to the policy.
Can go with this.
I'm confused where the fuck we are with the slides.
That's okay.
We can also skip that if you want.
Yeah.
We can start to talk about what happened.
Yeah. So basically the policy consists of a set of modules, 8 in total. We won't go through all of them. It's basically what to do in case of fire. What do you do when your server gets seized? How will you still be able to contact your users, be able to tell them what exactly is going on, etc.? Then mail, which focuses more on SMTP, yeah. Webmail, well, it's webmail. Certificates and keys for encrypted stream-based reserves.
That would be HTTPS, that would be Jabber or SMPP, that would be HTTPS and so on.
Yeah. Now file system storage, do you encrypt only do you encrypt at all the data that you store on your server in case it gets seized? Do you encrypt specific parts? Do you encrypt everything? Do you also generate a random key for your swap? Do you keep the encryption keys offsite, or are they placed on the server? Stuff like that.
I think it's we don't claim that this is an exhaustive list. So we don't claim to address all aspects of running a server with these modules. It's exactly modular, because when we have time and knowledge to extend the policy, then we can put new modules in. So it's not like if you address all these problems, then your server is fine. It's just if you do mail, maybe there are some ideas how to do mail better. We can go on. Go down. Yeah, so I can say each module has three levels. We explicitly decided not to call them secure, more secure, or elite, or have some funny names, but just to say that level 2 is more than level 1, and level 3 is the best practice that we can think of and that we have running on some servers.
Yeah, for instance, this is the part on webmail. So you have all these different kinds of setups that you can include. When we put up the Pusky server in the first place, we don't need level 2 compliance, I think, but now we managed to get to level 3. There's all these little things that you need to think about when you set up postfix. Be conscious that you actually enable TLS. There's some regular expressions which are really easy to strip mail headers, so people's home IPs don't get sent along with their email, etc., etc. And then as for logs, it's yeah, with Pusky we don't log anything, which makes it a bit hard at times, and I don't expect all Activist servers not to log anything. But I think it's really important to be transparent towards your users what you are logging, so that they know what they can expect in case a server gets raided.
It's also, I think the modularity also addresses this problem that in different countries, different levels of this policy are actually legal. And then collectives can make a decision whether they want to follow the law or not follow the law. But when they make a decision that they will follow the law and, for example, lock certain things, then the policy makes them to explicitly declare it to their users. So this is that there should be a clear understanding of what is implemented on their server and what the users can expect from this operator. Yeah. Okay, so with certificates, and I think this is a very logical progression here. So level 1 should simply conform to the best practices document, which should detail which are the good CIPers at the moment, which are the CIPer suits, how you should set up exactly the... So it should be, let's say, if you have HTTPS, it should be a properly deployed HTTPS. And on level 2, we require that the private keys on the server should be kept encrypted with a password. And then level 3 would say you have to store the keys off-site, so they shouldn't be on the server. So, for example, in the case of Apache, the most popular web server, this would mean that you want to restart your server, you have to go to the server room with a USB key, put it in, put the private key, give the private key to Apache, and then you can walk off the room. In practice, a lot of this, at least at some point, this is one of the nations. that you have to deal with, that if you want to be on level 3, it means that each time you restart your machine, you probably have to walk into the server room. So the best practices document, as we said earlier, it's something that should complement the exact requirements. And for example, tell you that, all right, I know that the webmail shouldn't store the IPs, but then how do I set up Squirrel Mail not to do this? How should I set up Roundcube to do this, and so on?
Yeah, the best practice is also meant as a continuous work in progress document, whereas the policy itself is supposed to be more static. Yeah, this is where you can put the policy, www.whiskey.nl/policy. And
so we need people to join us and work on it. I think that so far it has been 3 years that sometimes people got together, had a discussion, and we reached a level when we think that the policy is actually useful for setting up new servers, for communicating your compliance to your users. It is useful for different providers to exchange their best practices. But there is a lot of work to be done. It is a kind of beta state now. So you can use it on your own server. You can declare your compliance. You can copy the policy website, because we like to have it in a lot of different servers. It's in IkiWiki, so it's hard to copy. It's easy to copy, sorry. We just did it in half an hour. Yeah. It was easy. It was really easy. And then you can link to the policy websites. And the best practices is in a really chaotic state, so that could take a lot of work. So if you know how to, enable HTTPS properly on Apache, you can... we can come together and work on it. Actually, that's something that we wanted to say, that after the workshop, we would like to do a more, after the presentation, we would like to do a more practical workshop. So I guess we will be sitting on the tables at the back, and you can come to us, and we can find a place to sit down and say, okay, let's go through the policy ideas about cipher suits. I have some idea how to make some icons so that people can easily declare their compliance, or I want to declare my compliance. So if you have any practical suggestions, we will have an hour or so to work together and to improve the policy. Yeah. Now it's called providers. So now we don't really like the name. What is the name?
PCP.
Which is?
Drugs.
Yeah, it's a kind of drug. But it's providers commitment to privacy. I think that's it. And there was a lot of discussions also about how to call it. And at the moment, we think it would be nice to call it providers social contract. And there are no structures to discuss the policy, or no open mailing list, not even a contact address, because we were doing it in a really informal way. But if people are interested in getting involved and working on it, we can of course set up these structures. I think that's pretty much what we wanted to say. You can go to the website, check out the details, and then come and make like more concrete suggestions. And if you have some questions, we are also happy to answer them now.
Okay. What? Okay, thanks. So I think it's an excellent suggestion. So you already have a working document for this?
Yes, if you go to the website, you can read the policy itself, which pretty much says it's in the same style that we presented it. So
okay.
It says webmail. You have to have these three requirements for level one,
okay.
These two for level two.
And
actually, if you scroll a bit down, then you can see. for example, yeah, more, yeah. So this is male. This is level one. These are the 4 points that you have to comply with. Want to be male, level one. Okay. This is level two, and so on.
So I haven't read the document yet, obviously, but I just wanted to say that depending on how it's formulated, there might be some problems. For instance, if someone says, "Oh, we keep no logs," and they actually mean, "Oh, we activated any logging facilities ourselves," is a completely different statement from, "We have actually run test servers for a month and verified that nothing is." So depending on how the requirements are formulated, you might have a situation where a less sysadmin would say, "Oh, we comply with level two or three," whereas a more knowledgeable sysadmin would realize that, "Oh, there is no way you can do this because of yada yada yada." Also, I'm curious. Do you have any document for VPN services?
For what kind of services?
VPN services.
VPN. Specifically, no. When we talk encrypted stream-based services, some of that stuff, of course, applies to it. When we talk about storage, logs, that also applies to it. What to do in case of fire applies to it. And the last module is actually about how often and in what manner do you evaluate your compliance to the policy. So that is a bit an answer to your first question, that we are trying to explicitly define what does it mean that you say that you comply with the policy. And of course, we are in a difficult situation because we are not OSI that wants to certify factories, and we don't have these management consultants that you can hire to certify your activist project. And usually you don't want to give root on your servers even to your best comrades who could evaluate your policy compliance. So it's a kind of tricky question. And it's obviously the first, it's not really anchored in anything other than trust. So when there is a website, there is a collective, they say that they comply to this and this, you can only trust this as much as you can trust them in any other technical questions.
Are there any more questions? There's one over here.
I'd like to suggest something for the name. Why not call it service provider social contract? So you can pronounce it as specie.
Yeah, nice. Actually, when we wrote the talk and went through the slides, I changed all the places where you say provider to operator. Because I thought it's not so nice to think about your collective as giving a service that there are the consumers can then just take away. We should aim to a more collaborative relationship with our users. And in some cases, this is more or less true as well. But other than that, yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. And we need to find a good name for it.
So, any other questions from the audience? No, I don't think so. Thank you very much for your great work and your presentation.